Show, Phil Hendry.
Okay, welcome to the world famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast. What is that, bud?
Get down and late.
This is the concert.
Hold on. The Phil Hendry Show here, and what are you doing?
It's the concert for Sandy Relief, Phil.
Yeah, get him.
Yeah, look at that. See how Pete did it. Yeah, that's fine. The Phil Hendry Show. Will you turn that down, man? I can't do the show with that up.
Well, oh, God, look at this.
Yeah, see, years ago, when I started with this business, that really was important to me.
Give me that thing, man. Give me this.
What in the name of God did you just do?
Turn the TV down because I'm on the air.
Oh,
sorry, Mr. Henry. You didn't know. I was enjoying P. Diddley.
Yeah.
P. Diddley, huh?
Yeah. I mean P. Diddy.
Yeah, I mean P. Diddy.
Well, who was P. Diddley?
There wasn't any P. Diddley. There was no P. Diddley.
Well, I'm here to tell you there was, because I heard the song, You Can't Judge a Book by Its Cover. That's...
Yeah, that was P. Diddley.
That was Bo Diddley.
Oh, that's right, Bo.
Who was P. Diddley? Anyway, welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and that little moment there, that little bit of cultural commercial moment there, brought to you by Margaret Gray and myself and Bud and Robert, just goes to show you that we may think the name P. Diddy is weird, but then again, we all listen to Bo Diddley, so what's the difference, huh? What the heck's the difference, as National Lampoon once said, with the head blowed off? Now then.
What in the name of God?
What's that mean, Mr. Henry?
It was a National Lampoon bit about the Woodstock concert that they took lemmings and replaced people and they were lemmings, okay? You never heard lemmings?
No, man. I know. A lemming, they jump off a cliff.
Yes, that's the animal that jumps off the cliff.
Well, Lampoon did a bit once where it was the lemmings jumping off the cliff was like Woodstock for lemmings. That's what they did. They all got together.
And instead of listening to uplifting music, they killed themselves. Is this supposed to be funny?
I don't understand the humor end of that.
It was hysterically funny. And if you don't understand the humor end of it, Bud, or the humor end of it, Bud...
You said the humor end of it.
I know what I said. If you don't understand the humor end of it, Bud, then that shows that you're humor impaired. You are inevitably unentertainable. You can't be helped. But I'm telling you, it was the funniest thing I ever heard. The lemmings are jumping off the cliff, and they had the guy get up, and he said on the concert stage, he goes, you know, we're all here together, and we're all this and that, all this love stuff like they had at Woodstock. And he says, and I say, your brother is your brother. What the heck's the difference with the head blowed off, meaning they were all going to commit suicide later on?
Oh, well, that's just...
Yeah, that's funny, all right.
That is hysterically funny, not...
Well, like I said, you guys are humor impaired.
I'm humor impaired. I sit here night after night staring you up and down, trying to give some credibility, trying to give some life to this program, trying to help you, and I'm humor impaired.
Yes, if you can't figure out what's funny about the lemmings, then you're humor impaired. There's some people that think duct tape is funny. I don't. I don't find it funny. I find that people who think duct tape is funny are not laughing at the same things that I laugh at. Now, lemmings, they're funny. To me.
So that... excuse me, can I get some water, please?
Yes, ma'am.
And also, just a little bit of lemon in it, please.
Yes, ma'am.
And, I'm sorry, Phil. Robert?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you heat that up? I'd like it warm. A little bit of lemon.
Well, you got some honeys underneath the... in a sink.
Do you want honey?
Yes, squeeze a little bit of honey into it for me, okay?
All right. So you were saying...
Just hold on, Phil. Robert, my cup is in my purse.
You come on, Margaret. What do you want to say?
All I'm saying, Phil, is that you find lemmings funny. You find lemmings funny. People find duct tape funny. They find duct tape funny. What I find amusing is you looking at you and the fact that you're able to survive the way you do, the fact that you're able to eke a living out of this the way you do, the fact that night after night you come on the air and basically mock... Excuse me for a moment. I need more water, please.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to get it.
Yeah, do you want some honey?
Will you guys knock it off with the, do you want some honey? She needs some water. Just get some hot water for Ms. Gray, and we will continue.
Phil, I can't...
All right, let me do the talking then, okay? I understand what you're saying. How do I do it night after night? I don't know. I don't understand it myself either, but I have a lot of fun doing it. Is that good enough?
I'm just saying, I don't understand how it is. You sit here and mock, openly lambaste, and openly, if you want to put a word to it, you rape the entire talk radio format, and no one has taken you to task for it.
Maybe they don't care. There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, you gotta get more, even more bad about it then.
Yeah, I think you need to take it all the way to the edge, man. Just like a lemming. What is your what's a man you admire?
Yeah, that's it. Who's the man you admire the most? The lemming.
Well, a lemming's not a man.
I was gonna say the man that I admire the most.
Who's the man you admire? The lemming.
Yeah, isn't that a lemming?
I admire the lemming the most as a man.
What did you just talk about?
I was talking about lemmings.
Yeah, and what do the lemming do?
Lemming takes it to the edge, Phil.
It does. It takes it right up to the edge.
And then jumps off. That's what you clowns are not working into. You're not factoring that into the equation. The lemming does take it to the edge and then goes, goodbye, bonsai, and over the edge.
Why'd you hold your nose?
That's what people do when they jump into water.
But they ain't jumping into water. Sorry.
So, sure, I'll take it right up to the edge, but that is the challenge. When you take things up to the edge in life, you could very well fall off.
Well, Phil, that is spoken like a real chicken heart, because that's not what the people in this world do that have made the changes, the big changes in this world. They walk right up to the edge, and whether they're going to fall off or not, that be damned, they're going to do it.
That's great, Miss Gray.
Thank you.
Pardon me, let me clear your throat.
Thank you.
All right, well, that's I am dutifully chastised and reminded of my duty as a man. It is probably all of our duties. It's probably all of our duties as human beings. Because, as you know, as the saying has gone, there comes a time when you must seize events at the flood. What does that mean?
Hello.
It means that there is a moment in everyone's life when everything comes together. When everything comes together, all of the stuff that you're able to do, all of the challenges that life could possibly throw your way, that the things you know how to do can deal with, all of the events that can turn your life from one of, as Thoreau told us, quiet desperation into one of heroic growth and success, there comes a time for every one of us.
Seizing events at the flood, that's not a very good thing to be talking about on the day of, Robert?
Sandy relief.
Yay! Yeah, Mr. Henry.
Will you get out of here? Sandy relief.
Well, we were talking about seizing events at the flood. They did, and it didn't turn out too good.
I'm not talking about a hurricane. I'm talking about the great... That's the thing, the guy, the, never mind. No, but in any event, Sandy Relief, God bless you guys that are out there, and I didn't mean to use the word flood, now I feel really bad.
Yeah, you ought to, Mr. That's a bad case.
No, it wasn't. Now, there comes a time when we all must do what we all gotta do, you know, that's what Winston Churchill reminded us of, that's what Henry Thoreau reminded us of, that is what the great thinkers will always say to you. You know, there comes a time when you've got to step into the abyss. You have to take that step into the darkness, and when you do, then you will be a man, my son.
That was Rudyard Kipling.
It doesn't matter. It's all the same guy, you know. And so there you go. All right.
I don't know what that means, but it scares the hell out of me.
It just means, bud, that the time will come for you, too. You know, if you want to talk about it, 9/11, the United 93. Remember you guys were watching that movie the other day?
Yeah.
All right. Those people on that airplane got on that airplane that morning. What were they going to do? They were going to go to see their families. They were going to go to work. They were going to sit down and be on their laptops. They were going to, you know, watch a movie. They were going to sit and daydream. They were going to have their little, you know, in-flight meal. And then they were going to have their snack. And they were going to get off the plane. And they were going to go about their days. And they wouldn't have gotten to know each other. Maybe they'd say a word, maybe not. Maybe, hey, how you doing? Excuse me, let me get my bag. And that's about as much as it would have transpired on that aircraft. A day like any other day. And yet, on that day, history had something else in mind. On that day, fate reached out and touched each one of those people and said, we got something else for you to do. You aren't going to come back from it. But this will be a moment that will ensure the lives of others. You, if you choose to accept this mission, because they could have just sat there and allowed that plane to be crashed into the, you know.
They were going to crash into the Capitol.
That, I heard about the White House.
Whatever, you know.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be something. They could have sat there and just been petrified and scared and not, you know, risen to the challenge. But they didn't. And history was made. They lost their lives. They were going to lose their lives anyway, but they, in so losing their lives, they saved the lives of others. And they were, more to the point, an example that will last for years and years and years. Those people are an example to the rest of us of what happens to normal people in extraordinary circumstances. Normal people thrown into an existential hell, and they come out of it
smelling like a rose.
If you will, Bud, yes.
Yeah, my buddy's the same, man. I can fall into a pile of cow dung this deep and come out smelling like lilac.
Your father said that?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of know what he meant by that. All right, let's take a break.
I don't want to smell your dad.
Well, you don't want to smell him now.
Thank you. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Let's get into the news. Courtney Love had a problem with Paul McCartney jamming with Nirvana at the Sandy Relief Concert and other such news ahead. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage
truth
pass.
Watch is our video bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Sold, American.
Phil Henry Show.
It is the world famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Joining us online on our newsmaker line, I should say, from Temple City, California, is Jeff Dowder, who spent some time today watching the concert, the Sandy Relief concert. And there was a couple of stories, I think, that emerged from the concert today, other than the fact that the obvious fact, Jeff, that there was some much-needed money raised and help and support for people affected by this terrible, terrible storm. But the story about Courtney Love, quote-unquote, against Paul McCartney in Nirvana?
That was something that sort of came out of the blue, and I think a few of us seen that, and got to say that in a way I understand what she's talking about, because Paul McCartney is not really representative of the sort of music that, you know, Kurt Cobain and Nirvana have done, and I'm a very, very huge Nirvana fan, and I know their music backwards and forwards, and I'm very, very proud to say that, you know, I've been to a lot of their concerts, went to probably most of them.
You went to most of Nirvana's shows, huh?
Well, I probably have seen most of them, yeah. And so I feel like I know that band backwards, forwards, back, up and down, everything else. I'm looking at a replay, by the way, Phil, of the concert, and the guy that's on Boardwalk who looks ugly,
yeah,
is on right now. I just thought I'd let you know that. But
the guy who's on Boardwalk that looks ugly.
Are you talking about Steve Buscemi?
What?
Are you talking about Steve Buscemi?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's Steve Buscemi. I'm looking at him right now. All right, so let's get back to Nirvana.
Yeah, well, so anyway, Paul McCartney was going to be... Now, I'm not sure whether he did or not, because, you know, I in keeping with the wishes of Courtney Love and my great love for the music of Nirvana, I refuse. It wasn't that I don't like Paul McCartney. I do like Paul McCartney, but I also like Nirvana, and I just decided I didn't want to look at it for fear of what I would feel. Would it split my feelings? Would I become more of a Paul McCartney fan, or would I become more of a Nirvana fan? I just
Isn't this a little silly, though?
Why?
This is a benefit concert. This has got nothing to do with anything other than people, musicians getting together and trying to raise money for people affected by this terrible storm, this calamity. And so, who cares?
Who cares? But would you want to see somebody come out on the stage and, you know, you say who cares, but would you want to...
In other words, if McCartney's out there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, so what? He's not a member of Nirvana.
Well, they call it a reunion, and I mean, would you want to see someone go out on the stage and I don't want to put it like this, but and you know, pull her pants down and go on the stage?
No, of course I wouldn't.
Mike, that is not the point here. The point is that Paul McCartney is one of the reigning superstars of music. And the men in Nirvana should have been proud.
Well, I think they were. I think it was Courtney Love.
Well, there's no way of knowing, really. We'll never really know how Nirvana felt or how Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic and the rest of them felt about it. We'll never really know. And
what do you mean we'll never really know?
Well, you don't really know how they feel about it.
Well, they're on stage playing with a guy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he was going to be on stage with the members of Nirvana. Yes, you're right about that. And this was the first time that they were going to be playing together in a long time. Okay?
Yeah.
But McCartney comes out there, and that's a completely different thing that's going on. And you don't really know, and I don't think any of us will ever really know. Wait.
What do you mean none of us will ever really know? What are you talking about, man?
About how the
Nirvana feel about it.
Yeah, about how Nirvana feels about it. Are we ever really going to know?
Yes, we're going to know, because you can ask them.
Yeah, well, sure, you're going to ask them, but they're not going to be that forthcoming, Mr. Henry, I don't think. When you're talking, just as Ms. Gray said, about the number one guy in music.
Well, no, I'm not saying that Paul McCartney is so imposing a figure that you can't say to him, I'd rather not have you on stage with me. I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying that Paul McCartney is a reigning giant of popular music.
Well, you know, when you put it that way, how many people are going to say no to that? And how many people are...
Look at, man, you know, let's read this story here together. You got here Courtney Love. Courtney Love is reportedly not amused, quote-unquote, not amused at Paul McCartney jamming with the surviving members of Nirvana. The Beatles musician taking the stage, will take the stage. This is before the event. The stage with former Nirvana drummer Dave Grohl, who's now a member of the Foo Fighters, and bassist Chris Novoselic at the 12-12-12 Hurricane Sandy benefit concert at Madison Square Garden. Love was married to the band's frontman, Kurt Cobain, and she talked to the TMZ website, said she was not amused. She said, look, if John Lennon were alive, it would be cool.
Yeah, well, see, I think I agree with that.
Why?
I think John Lennon is far cooler in perception than Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney is seen more as, you know, a pop star. John Lennon was more of the rock star, you know.
Well, I think that John Lennon has bohemian credentials that Paul McCartney doesn't have. Paul McCartney seems to be very, very, what is the word? Paul McCartney seems to be very middle class.
Yeah, I see right now I'm looking at a replay on there, and I'm looking at the Who of Pete Townsend, who's got to be 80 now, I think.
He ain't that old.
Well, how old is Roger Daltrey?
Those cats are, you know, they're up there, man, you know.
Yeah, and they got a bass player and they got a drummer, and both these guys look like they're still probably in high school. So what is that about, you know? And that's why I'm saying...
You know what, Jeff, I don't know what your point is here. You're saying that Paul McCartney shouldn't be on stage with Nirvana because they're too young, or he's too old?
No, it's a perception, as I'm trying to say, is a perception of it. And again, how are we ever going to know what... Am I supposed to hang up now?
you can hang up or not. Why don't you hang on? We'll talk a little bit more with you, okay?
What?
Why don't you hang on and we'll talk a little bit more?
Can you hear? I don't think he can hear.
What?
Hang on and we'll talk some more with you.
I can't hear you. I'll go ahead and hang on, but...
Fine. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show here on this Wednesday night. Wow.
What?
Phil Hendry.
Speak up.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. We're here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And before we go any further in this evening's proceedings, I just would like to remind you that all this month at philhenryshow.com, we've got a little bit of a, well, you might say a special going. And what that means is, if you head on over to our website and you sign up for a backstage pass, we are giving you a freebie. We've got a little gift for you as a way of saying thank you for becoming a member of our Backstage Pass family. If you are signing up for one free month, if you're signing up for 1 month subscription, you will get one free download, a free CD download from our shop, Best of CD download. If you get a 6 month Backstage Pass, you will get three free Best of CD downloads from the shop. And if you get a 1 year, you will get five free CD downloads, Best of downloads from the shop. All of the audio and all of the downloads that we have on our radio website are all first generation, top quality audio. We have not only that, but we have our video cast, our video archives. We have a full year of our video and audio from the local Los Angeles show we did for a year on Saturday nights. We've got all kinds of miscellany, as we like to say. And, of course, we have our show logs that we're still working on. And in a couple of weeks, we are going to be available to you iPad and iPhone users live, meaning this show we're doing right now on video, you'll be able to watch us live mobile on your iPhone or your iPad, wherever you are. And I know there's a lot of my very dear friends out there who like to hang out at Starbucks late into the night, 2 o'clock in the morning maybe, scaring people. Well, guess what?
They can scare people now. Better see you live.
Exactly. Thank you, Bud, for that.
Scaring people. Is that what you said?
I'm joking. Come on, Margaret. In any event...
Yeah, Mark, you got to loosen up and understand what Mr. Emery's saying.
I don't need... I will... You know what? I don't need advice from the two of you. Thank you.
Great. So can I finish?
Yes.
Anyway, so get your backstage pass. Join the party here. It's weird. It's sometimes psychotic. It's very dysfunctional. Our Backstage Pass family is very weird and dysfunctional. They log in at night in the comments section. We have some amazing people there. I mean, I didn't say they were bad people. They're just really weird people. But then again, so am I. So join us at philhendryshow.com and be a part of, well, quite frankly, quite humbly, the greatest radio show that's ever been. Bud, on you. Cut. All right. Jeff Dotter joining us from Temple City tonight. All right. We were talking about, Jeff, and I'd like to get back to talking about the concert for Sandy Relief today, Madison Square Garden. The comments made by Courtney Love that she was against or otherwise was nonplussed or did not like Paul McCartney being a part of this show.
Let me just read you what I have here, and this is a news report that I got, and my sources are telling me. And, I've been doing this kind of thing for a long time. I'm not only a musician, as you know, but I'm also, a journalist, and I've been covering rock shows and the different events and the different things. And you were talking about the Lemmings concert, which that one I missed.
Well, it wasn't a concert.
The Lemmings concert you were talking about.
It wasn't a concert.
Jeff, it was not a concert. It was a National Lampoon comedy bit.
It was a National Lampoon comedy bit, okay. What were you talking about?
I was talking about a satire that the National Lampoon did on Woodstock, in which instead of having a Woodstock concert, it was a bunch of lemmings getting together, and they were going to jump off a cliff into the ocean. Obviously, a very, if you will, a sharp-pointed critique of the mass consciousness of a Woodstock, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, I'd say it's a pretty big slam on Woodstock. I mean, what's that about? You know, well, some people, it's been so long, and it was not part of my generation, but I will tell you this, as someone who looks at an event like Woodstock as a seminal event, and I like to say the word seminal. Can I just say why I like to say the word seminal, Mr. Henry?
Okay.
Because seminal comes from the word, well, I better not say it.
Oh, God, would you grow up? I'm going to leave the room.
Why did you want to say that?
Because it's the one time you're allowed to... Never mind.
Yeah, never mind is right. Go ahead.
So, I mean, I'm sorry if...
I'm going to leave the room, Jeff, if I hear any more of that.
Just go ahead.
But can I say it was a seminal event?
Yes, you can say it was a seminal event.
You can say it was a seminal event like Indian.
Yeah, that I could do that.
What do you mean you could say it like an Indian?
Well, you could say it like it was a seminal event.
Like what? Like it was at Florida State?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't. It was in upstate New York. Are these people real, or am I dreaming? What is going on?
Would you two guys be quiet, okay?
Yeah, we're not trying to do anything bad.
What? No, you're not trying to do anything bad. You're just idiots. What do you mean a seminal event?
They're talking about an Indian.
I know that. And I also know what seminal means, and I also know that we got sidetracked again because you clowns always want to just... Yeah, it's like working with a bunch of, excuse me for saying this, it's like working with a bunch of autistic kids. You guys cannot stay on track, man. You're all over the place.
Well, if you were working with a lot of autistic children, they'd all be sitting around with their mouths open, and you and I'd be the only ones talking.
Yeah, that probably, Ms. Gray has something. What are you doing, Mr. Andrew? I see you standing up in your video cast.
None of your business.
He was straightening up.
Shut up.
Well, you know...
Let's just start all over again. So Woodstock, a seminal event, was very harshly criticized by National Lampoon. Fine. Let's move past that. Let's get to today's concert. Paul McCartney, Courtney Love. She had a problem. What's her problem? You seem to understand.
I'm sorry. I got nervous.
All right. Take a deep breath.
Okay, I think what she was saying was basically this, Mr. Henry, that Nirvana is not Nirvana without Kurt Cobain. And for anybody to replace Kurt Cobain in Nirvana, hold on. For anybody...
What are you doing?
He's just taking a deep breath.
He's just catching his breath.
Yeah.
Are you nervous? That
yes, I told you.
All right, it sounds to me like you probably ought to have a chest x-ray or something.
Why?
Because it sounds like you're wheezing there, man. Do you smoke?
I do smoke. I smoke a sacred smoke. I don't smoke tobacco, if that's what you mean.
Oh, okay. You smoke marijuana?
I do smoke a sacred bud.
Okay, well, whatever.
He smokes the bud that's sacred. You don't just smoke weed.
Now, I know a lot of people smoke weed, but that's not what he does.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. I would still get a chest x-ray.
Well, I mean, I smoke bud in a sacred way, so I think you're probably, you know, mistaken.
Do you smoke it?
Yes, sir.
Then it's going into your lungs, and it could be affecting your lungs, and you should have a chest x-ray.
Maybe you didn't hear me, Mr. Harry.
No, you're not hearing me, Jeff, and I'm not going to talk about this anymore. If you're smoking marijuana, whether you do it for sacred reasons, you know...
I spoke donkey D word. I can't use the word as the sacred entity.
Donkey D word?
I think it is a foul and obscene word for a man's anatomy.
Yeah, and that's what they call the butt, donkey blank.
Well, that's really great, man. So you do this for religious purposes, huh?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, so you want to make sure that we all know that you smoke for religious purposes... Donkey D word.
Well, you can't judge a man. That's what they call it.
Yeah, well, the people that grow the bud, they won't put the name on it.
Yeah, and I just find that it's very good for the sacredness of it, you know.
Uh-huh. All right.
Well, I mean, Mr. Ernie, you're being very dismissive and everything, and I don't think it's right, and you know.
All right, I apologize. I apologize for everything, Jeff. I just want to get back to our point here. Now, Paul McCartney.
Yeah, Paul McCartney, I think, you know, I think when Paul McCartney walks on a stage and picks up a guitar, are you going to say no to him? No. Am I going to say no to him? No. As is.
Yeah, but Dave Grohl can say no to him, yes. And Chris Novoselic can say no to him, yes, because they were the guys that were in that band.
No, they can't, man, because look, are you kidding? Just because they were in Nirvana, Paul McCartney was in the Beatles, man. The Beatles. You understand what that's about and everything?
Yes, I understand.
Okay, I mean, Nirvana's good, man. I'm not saying that they're... I love Nirvana, but McCartney's going to throw his weight around... Because when he walks onto a stage, all bets are off. And he's going to say, yeah, I guess the big boy on the block's in town now, so everybody else just, you know, slink off the stage. Are you going to try and tell a Beatle what, you know?
Yes, if it's my band and I don't want him to play, I would be very, very respectful and I would be extremely skillful, if you will, in how I worded it. But I would try to say...
Well, all right, this is a good... How would you say that?
Yeah, pretend I'm Paul McCartney and you say it to me.
Pretend you're Paul... Okay. You know, how you doing, Sir Paul?
Right, I'm doing pretty good.
You don't have to do the accent, all right?
I'm just trying to get into it, that's all.
Well, sir, I wanted to talk with you about something.
All right, what do you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk to you, sir, about our performance this evening... the performance I'm going to have with Chris, and we're going to be doing some Nirvana songs.
Right. I'm going to be on stage. I've decided I'm going to be on stage with you, okay? So...
Well, sir, can we talk about that?
I don't have a lot of time. I got to go and I got to go take a... You know, whatever he's going to do. I mean, I got to go take a dump or something. And
yeah, I'm sure he's going to say that, man.
Well, whatever he's got to do, I got to go have dinner. I don't have a lot of time.
I know you don't have a lot of time, sir. Maybe we could talk after dinner?
Well, then we're going to go on stage and do the concert. Okay, jolly old Pip-Pip, I'll see you, you know, cheerio or whatever they say, and I'll see you at the concert, man. You got no shot, man. You got no shot.
Yes, I would. Number one, I would say, sir, I think this concert tonight will go better if it's just me and my bandmate in honor of Kurt. You know, I think you are phenomenal. Can we schedule a time later in the show with the producers where we could all, you know...
Well, what are you saying? Are you saying that I suck? Is that what you're saying, that I suck? Are you trying to say the Beatles suck, man? Because guess what? Your band, Nirvana, ain't nothing compared to the Beatles, man. It ain't squat compared to the Beatles, okay? I'm a Beatle, man. You understand? You're not even... There's no singular for... What are you, a Nirvana? No, you're a Nirvana member. That ain't nowhere near as cool. So, cheers. You know how the British tell you to F off? They say cheers. Anytime you hear a British guy say cheers, he's telling you to pound it sideways, up left, and maybe get some blood.
All right, I got to take a break. I understand your point.
Yeah, okay, but you're going to start talking bad about me, and I'm just trying to say... This is how it is, Mr. Harry.
I understand. I'll talk it over here with Margaret, and appreciate it very much, Jeff.
All right, Mr. Harry, and thank you. It's Jeff Dowd reporting of Sandy Relief and the concert.
Okay, we had to just...
Yeah, I understand.
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show, we'll be back. I'll kick this around more with my bandmates. Pip, pip, cheerio, and, you know, all that stuff.
Well, I mean, he was making a point. How do you say no to a Beatle?
No. That's how you say no. Oh, God. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Can you promote the Church of the Sacred Bud that I'm going to...
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night to 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Now, what have you found, bud?
Dad, got a couple of them here.
I don't think there's any concert stuff. Is there Billy Joel and... that's the football game. Why don't you take that football game off, man, before I flip my lid?
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen and Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, and the E Street Band, and a star-studded cast united in a determined show of support for the victims of Superstorm Sandy Friday night, focusing on themes of rebuilding and standing strong. The benefit, Hurricane Sandy Coming Together, held at Rockefeller Center in Manhattan, raised funds for the American Red Cross to be used in area relief efforts. It was broadcast on NBC and its affiliated cable channels. There you go. So
NBC had the broadcast rights and affiliated cable channels. What does that mean?
It means that whatever cable channels NBC owns, they're the guys that had the rights. I don't know. Nonetheless, that was the gist of that. Larry Grover is going to join us here. What I had hoped to find is some, I wanted to find some music from the concert, but I guess that's not forthcoming right now.
I've been looking all over online to try to find it, but I'm afraid about a copyright infringement and everything.
Well, that's a good point. Larry Grover joining us from Conservatives of Kern County. Larry, good to have you join us. How are you?
I'm about as good as I could be, Phil. You know, given what's been going on here on the this particular day, you know, my heart goes out to the people who survived the Sandy. Not survived the concert, but the people that went through the Sandy hurricane. What I'm looking at here, and I think a lot of people in your audience tonight are going to agree with me, because thank God we have the bastion of talk radio. Thank God that talk radio exists as the last bastion of truth and of the, if you forgive me for saying this, the conservative point of view.
Well, that, not if some of us have anything to say about that, Larry.
I understand that, Ms. Gray. I understand that perhaps you would like to pollute the airwaves with your big government message.
No, I'm not looking to pollute the airwaves.
But I'd like to finish what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
What I want to say is this. If you want to have a concert for hurricane relief, what about Katrina? Everybody was telling George Bush and the Bush administration that they were nothing more than murdering genocidal maniacs. And now you got a concert for people that are still, they're hurting from this Hurricane Sandy, but nobody is saying about Obama, hey, looks like you dropped the ball. There's a whole lot of people here that are...
This is, you know something, excuse me, I need some water with...
Wait, I'm not finished.
I understand. I'm just asking for some water and some lemon, please.
Yes, ma'am. You still want the honey?
I want honey with it, too.
Yeah, can I finish?
Go ahead.
Hold on. I want some honey. I want lemon. I want hot water.
Holy God.
You got a problem there, Larry?
Yeah, I've got a problem. I'm trying to get something said here.
Margaret, are you done?
No, I'm not done. I'd like hot water. Can you butter me a piece of toast?
Just go out and get her the water.
I want a buttered piece of toast.
Yeah, well, you know, Ms. Gray, you tee them up, and I'll go ahead and hit them out. I'll bet you want something buttered.
That does it. I'm...
Well, now, wait a minute.
No, I'm not going to listen to this.
She's leaving.
Well, that just goes and shows... It goes to show you what liberals...
No, Larry, that was uncalled for, that comment.
What?
I bet you'd like something buttered.
Well, she asked for a buttered piece of something. I didn't...
Toast!
I asked for buttered toast. And all you could do is make fun of that.
God, what do you got going on over there anyway, Henry? It sounds like a zoo of malformed people. Malformed adults.
Yeah, in many ways, that's what I've got going on here. A zoo of malformed adults. You're absolutely right. All right. Your point being that Hurricane Sandy looks to be as every bit the disaster that Hurricane Katrina was. Is that it?
No. Not every bit the disaster, but there's obviously a lot of people that are hurting. And they're having to have a benefit concert for them. I don't hear anyone accusing President Obama of trying to kill people, of a slow response, this and that.
Well, there wasn't the slow so-called response to this event that there was perceived to be with Katrina. Now, there are a lot of reasons for the Katrina so-called slow response. One of the reasons was the absolutely devastating nature of what happened to New Orleans. Nobody no one really, truly predicted that. And I think that one of the things we're guilty of in this world is that we all have this genius. We all become geniuses the next day. We're all, well, man, I know exactly how they should have played the game. I know exactly how that guy should have shot that basketball. I know exactly how the Army Corps of Engineers and this and the president and that. We're all brain surgeons. When it comes to Katrina or even 9/11, two unprecedented events, we're all especially brain surgeons when it comes to that stuff, because anybody could see that why, you know. So I think that the President Bush took a lot of unfair heat for that. I believe that the state of Louisiana, as well as the mayor of Louisiana, were very, very slow to react, given all of the other problems. Yeah, the levee was not well-maintained. Yeah, the levee was probably not built properly in the first place. Yeah, there were a lot of payoffs. Yeah, there was a lot of sloth and slovenly behavior by the representatives and so forth.
Are you giving a speech, or am I going to get to say anything? Because now I hear the music, and it's the end of the hour.
Well, Larry, if you're going to sit there and cry...
Well, all I was saying is I wanted to say something.
Hang on.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show as we continue talking with Larry Grover about the unfair treatment of President Bush as opposed to President Obama with Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Katrina. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, even though Sandy was a tropical storm and not a hurricane.
Yeah, that's even worse.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I got rid of Larry.
Well, I'm glad you did, because that buttered...
Hold on.
I dirty said I can't help it.
I don't like the idea of them laughing.
All right, bud, don't laugh at stuff like that. We're back here on the Phil Hendry Show. Larry Grover was on with us moments ago. We're all done, Larry. If it's nothing against you. I mean, we're just done talking about Hurricane Sandy, and that's it. And if you want to say... whatever you want to say about how Obama's being treated with kid gloves, I don't agree. I don't agree that Obama's being treated with kid gloves. I think what's happened is that there has been a better response to this, even though it's a devastating storm. And like I said, you know, the unprecedented nature of Katrina, the political climate at the time, things conspire to make other things happen. You can't go back to 2005 and make everything equal and say, oh, look at how they treated George Bush. Shouldn't Obama be treated with the same? It just isn't in the nature. What you can do as a way of solving these problems, you can simply say, here is the historical reality. This is what we're dealing with now. This is what we were dealing with then. This is why it's different. Today, we have Hurricane Sandy or Tropical Storm Sandy, and we know more today on how to deal with these things than we did before Katrina. Katrina was unprecedented. It was a city, a major American city underwater. Underwater! Anybody that doesn't take that into consideration before they start running their yap about Bush or FEMA or anything, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. Now, if you want to talk about the Army Corps of Engineers, and you want to talk about the history of this levee in New Orleans, one that I used to ride on, not ride, but run on top of when I lived in New Orleans, because I lived in New Orleans for a good year and used to go out jogging back in the days when I jogged. People used to jog. Did you know that?
What does that mean?
Is that like slow running?
Yeah, that's what everybody said. Do you jog? I go jogging. It was like running. I used to go out and run on top of the levee. The river ran near my home where I lived on the West Bank, and I had my big black and white dog, part pit bull, part something. I don't know what the hell. His name was Oscar. He belonged to my roommate more than me. And Oscar was a great dog, except he growled at, you know, black people. Now,
oh, my God.
No, he didn't. I'm joking. We used to joke about that. Which is not much of a joke, you're right. But it was the South. What do you want?
What, you wanted to?
Yeah, you want that dog to growl at black people.
No, I did not. I was just saying, when we lived down there, we knew of dogs like that. White dogs? You never heard of white dogs, huh?
No.
What do you mean, white dog?
There were some dogs that were trained to dislike black people. It was a horrible, horrible reality of the history of our country, and I don't want to go into it, but that's just... Anybody that doesn't know, for instance, the history of Louisiana politics and how that factored into how that levee was built, who got contracts, how well it was built, how well it was maintained, whether this was done, that was done, something else was done, federal government's problem, maybe the federal government's problem, maybe more to the point, the individuals representing those districts at that time and the Army Corps of Engineers and individuals involved in, taking these contracts. You know, we can blame Uncle Sam for a lot of stuff, but really, when you're talking about Uncle Sam, you're really just talking about the National Football League. And what you're missing is that there's 32 teams. So when your favorite team loses, you never say, boy, the National Football League just blew it again. No, you generally say, those Seahawks really suck.
Do they?
I don't know. Somebody sucks this year. Well, you know, not to oversimplify, and I don't think I am oversimplifying, that's exactly how this thing should be viewed when we talk about the government and how it, quote, fails us all the time, which I'm getting very tired of hearing that because, as the man once said, you know, how much does a postage stamp cost you? Got pretty good service for the price of a postage stamp for all of those years before we had email. And how bad is your life, really? So, I got all kinds of stuff I could bitch and complain about. I can find something wrong with every single entity that I deal with, government entity that I deal with from one day to the next, okay?
Well, what government entities are you dealing with from one day to the next?
None, but, you know.
Yeah, cops.
Yeah, cops, there you go. And I don't deal with cops all that much. All right.
What does that mean, cops? You get pulled over?
No, I was pulled over, the most recent time I was pulled over, the cop let me go with a warning. And what I had done is I'd run over three children. No, I'm kidding.
You should say so.
No, it was a stupid thing that I was doing. I was using my cell phone, and the cop let me go. And he was actually very funny about it. He said, you know, okay, let's see, it's raining, and you have your cell phone there, and you're driving with one hand, Mr. So-and-so, you know, Henry, as he looked at my license. He said, you know, I said, you're absolutely right, officer. I blew it. He says, well, you know what, don't do it again, okay? I don't like getting out of my car in the rain. And he went back to his car, and that was the end of that. So it was a...
Yeah, you got away with that one there.
No question about it. All right, welcome to this hour of the world-famous Phil Henry Show, brought to you in part by philhenryshow.com. That's right. And what we'd like you to do is go get a backstage pass and be a part of our evening broadcast here with our video casts, as well as all of the podcasts that go out part of the show, as well as all of the archives we have, close to 5,000 hours of archive material, all kinds of stuff at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. You'll be glad you did. Okay. Couple of things here. We covered the Sandy Relief concert. A couple of other things that I find compelling in the news. Roger Goodell's authority takes a hit. Now, what happened? Roger Goodell is the commissioner of the National Football League. And ironically, former commissioner Paul Tagliabue did it. This according to a story in ESPN.com's blogs column. Tagliabue, appointed by Goodell, overturned the suspensions of four current and former New Orleans Saints players. Suspended by Roger Goodell. He ruled Scott Fujita was innocent of all conduct detrimental to the league. No longer is Goodell alpha and omega when it comes to doling out punishment. These days, the sun no longer rises and sets on his judgments. Just look at how many players will start vigorously challenging each and every punishment he doles out because they sense his vulnerability. If players can get Goodell to appoint a hearing officer to handle an appeal, even if they must use public pressure to do so, then they have a good chance to get his decision overruled. What does Goodell say about this? He said, absolutely not. I think that's also made clear. This is not precedential, as in precedent, not presidential, as in President of the United States.
What?
Yeah, what do you mean?
If I got to explain this...
Oh, just ignore them.
What are you talking about? It said presidential.
Precedent, as in a precedent, as in something that begins a movement. precedent setting. See?
Uh-uh.
Great. So the commissioner of the National Football League, this guy Roger Goodell, who has been a real heavy hand with the players, and for, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, we're talking about Pac-Man there with Tennessee, talking about Michael Vick, and all kinds of problems. He has said, I'm not even going to screw around with you guys. We're going to kick your ass out of the game for a while to see how much you like that. And then we'll, you know, because this is not, you know, we're not talking about you guys working here for the State Department. You're not working for the Boy Scouts of America. This is a private enterprise. We've got a business to run. We have customers. We have a goodwill to maintain between ourselves and our customers. And you guys are jacking that up.
Well, I think that what he's saying, though, is that he wants to be some sort of a... What was the man that Frank was talking about? Mountain man?
Yeah, what about a mountain man?
What do you mean, mountain man?
What she was talking about.
Well, who was the mountain man?
The guy in Deliverance.
You were talking about Mountain Landis?
The baseball, yes.
The baseball, yeah. Kennesaw Mountain Landis, that was his name.
What? That's kind of a whacked out name. That sounds like...
Can you shut up, bud, for just 5 seconds? Yes, that guy was considered to be an example of what you needed as a commissioner in sports. Because what he did is he came in after the 1919 Black Sox scandal, which was a bunch of guys for the Chicago White Sox allegedly taking money, which, they not alleged, they did. To throw the series, whether in point of fact they had to throw the series or whether they just sucked enough and Cincinnati was going to beat them anyway, we'll never really know. But nonetheless, there's a couple of indications where they could have certainly, had they played better, turned the tide. He threw out every guy implicated. Lifetime ban, including a guy by the name of Shoeless Joe Jackson.
That's a guy that they had a movie about.
Well, in Field of Dreams, they had Shoeless Joe. Shoeless Joe Jackson was one of the best hitters in the American League at the time, and certainly would have been a valuable asset to the Chicago White Sox in the series. Nonetheless, Kennesaw came in, pitched their asses out. That's the end of that. Goodbye. See you later. And everyone thinks that that guy's fantastic. So that's what they want with commissioners. And that's what, in his own way, Roger Goodell is trying to be, a guy that doesn't take any crap. And when you talk about... The problem with baseball is they've got this antitrust exemption. Baseball cannot be sued as a monopoly or an unfair or illegal trust because baseball, it was ruled in the 20s by the Congress, and I guess the Supreme Court upheld this, is not a business, it's a sport. What is that supposed to mean? We have no idea.
Well, they're saying that baseball represents America. It's an institution... Above and beyond being a business.
What's that mean?
In other words, it's like the Lincoln Monument or the it's like a national park. There's only one problem. That national park is making all kinds of money, and the American people ain't getting any piece of that. Even a national park, you know, when you charge people admission and they go in and they use the campsites or whatever, that money is used to maintain the park, and it's used for the public, for the purposes of the public. There's nobody pocketing any money.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, if you go to the,
What's that one, Jellystone?
There is no Jellystone.
Yellowstone.
The concessions.
All right, well, let's talk about this when we come back. And we're also going to get on the line here. I'd like to get on the line. Is it Dave Oliva who is, I don't know who it is. Who's our sports guy? Well, we'll find our sports guy. We'll be right back. World famous. Oh, Vernon Dozier.
Get Coach Dozier, yeah.
We'll get Coach Dozier to talk a little bit about the Roger Goodell and Paul Tagliabue combine in the National Football League and the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Bye.
Roger.
World famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with us from Glendale, California, is Vernon Dozier. He's a football coach. He's an educator and is a guy that has, you know, been with us off and on a variety of topics for a long time. Vernon, good to have you on the program. We're going to talk a little bit about Tagliabue and Roger Goodell and everybody else. How has the football season fared for you?
We didn't have a very good year this year, Phil, but that's only because a lot of our seniors graduated last year, and I have tried to, you know, I try to put it into perspective, talking to some of our young people and telling them, you know, we've got a lot of young players, but at the high school level, just like at college, you know, you lose, you know, your seniors, and I've told the kids that we'll go get it next year. We lost our quarterback last year, a young man by the name of Calavan, who signed a letter of intent to go to Cal Berkeley, and it's been a tough one. But you know, I told the kids after this season, when we were knocked out, we thought we had a shot at winning the league, and we had a playoff. We did not make the playoff game; it was two other teams that tied, and we came in third.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, and I told the kids, I said, to put it into perspective, and the fact that you and I are talking about it right now, I'm kind of going back on my word to my kids, and really, word to myself. I said I just would talk about it. I told the kids I didn't want to talk about it, and they talk about it, and I tell them don't.
You just don't want to talk about it.
It's a very painful topic.
It is, Margaret. It's you know, we've made the playoffs, I'd say, every year save this year. And since I've been coaching at Belmar, and I've been coaching at Belmar since 1987, so that's, you know, 25 years now, and they've named the stadium after me. We've only missed going to the advancing to the playoffs maybe four times. And
well, that's a great record of success.
Here I am talking about it. I don't want to talk about it, but I told the kids I didn't want to talk about it. They were coming up to me. And
What were the kids saying?
Well, my players.
Yeah.
Well, but see, I don't want to talk about it, you know. And
but what we want to know is how the young people...
The kids would want to talk about it. I said I told them. And if you're probably... If you're talking about the... you're talking about the two players, the parents, the Ellis family is one, and I worked that out with them.
I don't know of any story.
You haven't heard about that?
No. Margaret?
No.
Well, I told Jeremy Ellis, I said, I told you I don't want to talk about it. I picked him up and I held him out a window. And I'm telling you, Phil.
You're kidding me.
No, hold on. Let me just say this. I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart how sorry I am I did that. And I apologize to the family. I apologize to Jeremy.
Coach, can I ask you something?
Let me just get this out, please, if you don't mind, Margaret.
All right.
I said I didn't want to talk about it. I told you, Phil, and I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming Margaret. But I said I don't want to talk about it. And here I am talking about it. And I didn't want to talk about it, and now I'm talking about it even more than I didn't want to talk. Now I'm talking about it way more. And
I got to apologize.
Well, no, it's okay, because now I'm talking. What am I going to do? Not talk about it now? I said I didn't want to talk about it. I told my players I didn't want to talk about it. When you only missed the playoffs four times in a 25-year career, you don't want to talk about it. You don't want anyone to talk about you. I have a problem processing my emotions, Phil, as you probably know, and it has not served me well in my life. I have a tendency to start to talk about it. I have a tendency to start to talk about it like a stupid dumbass.
What are you doing?
I'm not doing anything. I'm about to talk about it.
Well, are you having a problem? You said you can't process your emotions.
Would you do me a favor and shut up? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that.
What did you say to me?
I said, shut your mouth. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. I'm having a difficult time processing my emotions.
Well, I think you sound like you need a psychiatrist.
But you shut your mouth. Shut your mouth.
Vernon, hold on for just a... Don't say anything, okay?
Shut up.
Don't say anything. Whatever's going on with you right now, we don't need to have you on the air.
I agree.
Okay? Get yourself collected.
It'll just take me a few minutes, but please, I gotta want to talk about it.
It sounds to me like you're regressing some into an emotional place.
Did you? You just told me to shut up.
Shut your hole.
Okay, let's put him on. What is up with him?
I don't know. Some kind of emotional problem that he has, I guess.
Yeah, he's never talked that way around me.
All right, so we're going to come back and talk with Vernon Dozier. Hopefully, get on the phone to his wife. You know, his wife, what's her name?
Carolyn.
Carolyn. Ask her if she knows. Do you have her cell number?
I've got two numbers on her. Try these, bud.
This is saccharin.
No, I mean these phone numbers.
Saccharin?
Yes, I use saccharin. I don't trust Splenda. Is that all right with you?
Fine. All right, so call her up and find out what's going on with him. We just want to talk about football. I don't care. I don't want to talk to him about the season if it's that emotional, okay? It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 818. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. I'm thrown for a loop by Vernon.
Well, he sounds as if he's got some... I want to say it's almost like possession, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Like there's some kind of a dumb... I mean, I don't mean to... It's like a dumb demon has possessed, not a smart one.
A dumb demon?
Yes, a stupid, idiotic demon.
All right, we'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Shut up. Shut it out.
Phil Hendry.
Yep.
Welcome to the show. I was just, they're going to blur, everything's blurred. I was just showing our Phil TV viewers my 3D feature of maps. Now, this is the iPhone Maps feature.
Oh, that's just like a Disneyland ride. That's really neat.
Yeah, it looks like that one if you had wings. Remember that one?
Yeah, I like that ride. You've been on that one?
Yeah, if you have wings, yeah, Disneyland?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. You get in these little buckets, and it's like you're flying over things. But this 3D feature, you can see this. It probably is losing a lot holding it up there for you guys to view. But here's a shot of the baseball stadium in Cincinnati. I had Cincinnati loaded in for some reason. I don't know what it was. And I can tell now by looking at this, you're not really getting the 3D effect here on the video cast. But... when you look at the phone, it's as if you are gliding in a three-dimensional manner over the rooftops of these houses and these points of interest in whatever city you're looking at. And for Cincinnati, Cincinnati is actually an interesting city to look at using the satellite feature. See, one of these days. Maybe we'll get this feature for our video cast. What would be fantastic is to interface the phone with our video function.
You're speaking a language I don't know anything about.
No, I know what you mean. So the phone, what do you mean?
I mean, it would be cool if any image that came up on our iPhone, we could automatically bang, click over to the to our video cast, is all I'm saying. Cincinnati is a cool city to look at by way of this feature, this 3D feature, because you can see that their two football, their football stadium and their baseball stadium are on the same side of the banks of the same river there, whatever river that is. I'm sorry, people in Cincinnati, I don't know your city that well, and I barely know my own city. I can't find my way around L.A., are you kidding? But you see on the left is the football stadium, on the right is where they play baseball. It's right there on the banks of this river. And there's a bigger picture of the river and the riverfront there.
Why is part of that river brown and the other part's blue?
Yeah, that's because they only clean the one area.
What do you mean they only clean the one area?
Well,
no, hold on, don't, he's a big boy, Phil, he can, what do you mean they clean only the one area?
They polluted one area of it, and the other area they cleaned up.
Oh, baby.
Bud.
No, hold on, he's a big boy, he can answer his own questions. I want you to tell me how they clean up one part of a river, and within 3 feet, the other part is filthy, dirty brown.
Because the people, see the brown river, that's where the toilets go. See the blue part? There's no toilet go in there.
Oh, I see. And how do they keep the toilets from going into that part?
They've got a wall. There's an underwater wall.
Yeah, an underwater wall. Yeah.
What are you, what do you mean an under, don't help him. What do you mean an underwater wall?
See right there? That's where the wall is, and the brown water that's from the toilet goes to there. On the other side, it's all blue and beautiful. See?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't like being defeated in an argument by a...
Bathroom?
Yes. How dare you let that idiot... I want to say one thing, Phil.
Margaret.
I want to say... You made reference during the break to an individual being possessed by a demon. Now, I'm not Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic as you were, Phil. And I know that you have some sensibility in that area, if not outright belief, correct?
I would say I have a sensibility, yeah.
All right. If it's possible to be possessed by a demon, I was intrigued by something else you said, that not all of the demons in hell that are at the beck and call of Lucifer are intelligent. Some of them are imbeciles. Would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't agree with any of that. I don't know anything. I don't even know if the devil exists, okay? I am simply saying I understand the sensibility coming from my Catholic upbringing.
I think he's possessed by an imbecile demon. I don't know how to explain it.
What do you mean?
I mean there are demons that have come out of hell that are not so much evil as they are just... They are so stupid.
Well, there she goes. So I think that passes...
Yeah, there she goes down. She got defeated in an argument by me.
That's right, bud. But you know what? There'll be a round two.
Close your door, Margaret, please.
It's not my door. It's your door to the toilet.
Close my door to the toilet, then. What?
She's saying she got defeated in an argument by me. That she must think she's pretty smart.
I don't know, bud, but all I'm saying is don't pay any attention and try to keep your own counsel and try not to piss people off the way you do with your butting in all the time. Okay?
What to talk about a dumb demon if he's possessed by an idiot?
If he's possessed by an idiot, what?
What do you mean?
Yeah, what is that supposed to mean?
She's talking about a demon being a dumb demon.
I know who we got to talk to. Father McQuarters, if you get him, okay?
What about Vernon Dozier?
Vernon Dozier, that's the guy that was possessed by the idiot demon. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to talk to him. He's got some kind of Tourette's syndrome. I don't know what's up with him.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Phil. It's Tourette's syndrome. Where's the toilet paper?
Bud, would you get...
It's underneath the sink.
Would you kindly... Please hand me a roll through the door. I don't want to reach all the way over there.
Go ahead, bud.
All right.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445 as we're talking here. Father James McQuarters is up at Belmar Academy. Father McQuarters, how are you this evening?
Good, Phil. How are you?
I'm great. And we're talking tonight about demonic possession.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you would comment.
Well, I'll try and help you. I'm not, you know, that we've had discussions and there have been encyclicals and papal bulls that have been handed to the Holy Father down to the different dioceses on the discussion of demonic possession. And the encyclical of the papal bull has very clearly stated that they don't want us making a mockery of this topic, turning it into some sort of a morning show shtick and this kind of thing, because one of our diocesan priests, Father Remlach in New York, was put on call and was eventually banished from the diocese to an outlying region because he had been on some kind of a morning show. I think it was the Skippy and Frank or the Billy and Timmy, one of the shows. And they made a big joke about demonic possession, and Father Remlach was doing his demon voice, which I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's quite amusing, but he was banished. He was given a papal banishment.
No, I didn't hear about any of this.
No, he was sent to an outlying diocese, an outlying church, and it is there that he'll do his penance, and it is there that he, in humility and reverence to God and the Virgin Mary, he'll bring himself back, rehabilitated and recuperated, and once again serve God and Jesus Christ in the manner that he should.
I understand, Father, what you're talking about here is that we not make a big joke out of it.
That's exactly correct.
All right. Can I ask you, and I'm not trying to be funny, is there such a thing in the literature, in the liturgy of the church, is there such a thing as, we know that the devil is evil. And
that he is.
Yeah, and we know that the legion that he commands.
They're all the spawn of Satan, and they're all the spawn of fallen angels, is what they are. God turned his face away from them, you see.
Right. Is there such a thing, though, as an evil demon that's also just a stupid?
There are, yes. They're part of the legion. You know, you can make a joke about it and say they're just blithering idiots and be done with it. But we see it's much more dangerous to be possessed by an imbecile or possessed by the idiot, as you said to Bud. I don't think Bud is possessed. I think Bud is just what he is. A young man trying to find his way in this world, and he thinks it's real funny to pretend like he doesn't understand certain things. I think Bud understands far more than he lets on.
That's not true, Father. That isn't true.
Oh, get off it. You know as well as I do, young man, that you understand far more than you ever let on, don't you?
No, not really.
I've always suspected that, Father.
Let me tell you. I'm here to tell you it's true. As you know that you're not as dumb as you let people think. And that you're much more intelligent, and I think you've got your wits about you. And,
That's only because when you said you want to go to Arby's, I go, no. No, I'm not going to go to Arby's with you.
That's nothing about, how dare you say that to me?
What are you saying?
Just, I didn't trust going to Arby's with him.
You're saying, in other words, what you're trying to say to me and to all of the people listening is that I invited you over to get a beef witch, and you think I wanted to get a peek.
That's what you were talking about, yeah.
Are you out of your mind? I wouldn't waste 5 seconds in any event, Phil, it's all it's said.
Did that happen, Bud?
No, I didn't go to Arby's with him.
Yeah, I remember that day he wanted to go get a beef witch, and I said, well, will you go over and get me a beef witch and get me one of them curly fry? And he said, I ain't going. And I said, why? He said, because I don't want to go with Father McWhorter. And I said, why? And he said, because I want to make it look like I think he's a perv. I said, do you think he's a perv? He said, no.
No, I didn't say that.
Aha! So that's it. I knew it. I knew you were trying to make a joke. I knew that you were trying to make a farce of me. Trying to make a farce of me, you were.
All right, let's not have any more of this, all right? Let's not have any more of this, even for kidding's sake, making it look like something. I don't like that, okay?
Why not, Father McWhorter? You're always playing a joke on people.
I don't play jokes. I don't play malicious jokes. How dare you? How dare you? I don't play malicious jokes like that. And Mr. Henry's asked me a question. And I'm trying to answer the question as honestly as I can.
All right, the question is very simply this. Is there such a thing as stupid devils?
Yes, there are stupid imbeciles. There are, when I was in Africa, and you'll recall the movie The Exorcist. I'm sure you remember that. And in that film, Father Mann had spent some mission time in Africa. And I believe they dealt with that in the 16th films, Exorcist II and Exorcist III. Well, there is no such man as Father Man, but that was based upon
the mission work of several, if you will, different priests that became composites in the film, The Exorcist.
Are you saying The Exorcist was based upon a true story?
No, it's not based on a true story, no. But I will say that the mission work that's done by Catholic priests, and I've been a part of that myself, is based in some... the mission work done before the man in the film is based in some measure on reality. Now, he was in Africa. That was The Exorcist. There's one other thing. In the film, in the song Touch Me by the Doors, at the very end, he says, do you remember when we were in Africa? All right. That's Jim Morrison having a flashback. I don't know. Now...
What are you talking about?
He's talking about when Jim Morrison says, do you remember when we were in Africa? But that's not Touch Me. That's another song.
What is that? That sounds like the Dumb Demon.
No, it's Miss Grace. She's in the bathroom.
In the bathroom? Why don't you have the good common decency to get out of the toilet to speak to me, woman? I find that to be offensive.
Don't talk to me like I'm just another Catholic. Here,
I'm not talking to you.
Father, don't talk. First of all, I'm not Catholic. Second of all, I'm not one of your breeding in captivity Catholic females. Thank you.
That's not what I'm saying. I dare you. That's not what I'm saying at all.
All right, let's calm this down, because all I was asking about were stupid demons, okay? And if you can be possessed by a dumb demon.
Yes, you can.
All right, hold on. I want some examples when we come back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Why am I worn out? Just a simple little interview.
I don't know. I didn't say anything wrong.
Yes, you did. I just found out that you're trying to make Father McQuarters look like some kind of a perv by not going to Arby's with him for a beef witch.
Yeah, and I wanted a curly fry, too.
I don't care. Your curly fries are of no concern to me.
Oh, brother. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth
but
is our bitch.
Quit trying to sound like you're all that.
The Phil Hendry Show.
You're all that.
Are you going to Arby's now?
No.
Because if you were, I wanted to get a beef witch.
I understand that.
So you can follow His Holiness on Twitter, which is what I've done, and I recommend that your listeners follow His Holiness on Twitter as well.
All right. Well, by the way, welcome back, folks. Phil Hendry Show. We have Father James McQuarters on with us. By the way, my hat's off, a tip of the cap to Twitter for verifying all 8 or 9 of the Pope's accounts. That's great. We're still waiting to get verified ourselves here at the Phil Hendry Show, but it's good to know that the Pope's 8 accounts are all verified.
Well, Phil, you shouldn't be bitter about something like that. He's the Pope. Of course you got to verify the Pope. Why wouldn't you verify the Pope, you see?
Well, yeah, I understand that you verify the Pope. I get that, of course. I don't know why. I'm not even sure I understand what verification means.
It means that that's the real Pope.
Yeah, I know that it means that that's the real Pope. I get that. Well, no, okay, I understand.
And the fact that you're not verified yet, and I'm sure that at some point in the future you'll be verified, Bill. You'll probably be verified at a point in time when you don't care anymore.
That's probably going to be the case, yeah.
But the Pope needs to be verified, and I would heartily recommend to all of your listeners that you follow Pope Benedict, our Holy Father, the Bishop of Rome, on Twitter, and he's over there as Pope Benedict. And you can also find the 7 or 8 other accounts.
And by the way, when it says that I saw Pope Benedict and he is being followed by 7 people, they're all him.
That's right. Is there a problem you've got with that?
I don't understand. He follows himself.
He follows himself. Those are the accounts that he wants you to know about. And he wants you to know that Pope Benedict is indeed following himself, and that these are all the accounts. What other accounts would follow? Who else would the Pope follow? If Jesus Christ had an actual Twitter account, and not these blasphemous fake Twitter accounts that you see, and I'd like to make the statement right now, that I'm sure that you mean it by all, you know, all jokes aside and everything, that you're not trying to be, you're not trying to be insulting, but you are, whoever you are that has all of those Jesus Christ accounts that wanted to say that.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of people with Jesus Christ accounts, aren't there?
There's lots of Jesus Christ accounts. I've seen them. But I'm just saying to anyone that has one, do you know the damage that you do? Do you know the blasphemy? And do you know the disrespect that you pay to your fellow man that those of us that are Catholic are Christians and in service to Jesus Christ. Do you know the insult that you pay to them? Are you that angry with God? Are you that angry with religion? Can't you grow up and be a man and quit being a child?
All right, Father, you know, it is by way of Twitter's own explanation there, satire account.
Oh, the satire of my bare rear end. The satire of my bare rear end. It's a blasphemy. It's a blasphemy. And it's an insult to your fellow man, those of us who are Catholic or Christian and in the service of Jesus Christ, for them to have a fake Jesus Christ account. I ran out of air.
Father, this is Margaret. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time talking now. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can we get back to this idea that a man can be possessed by an idiot?
By an idiot demon.
Yeah, by a stupid demon.
By a stupid, yes. This can happen. In my most recent experience, it happened in New York City. And I've been called to, I was in a parish in New York City, a small parish on Long Island, in Queens. And I've been called to an address that was on the other end of Long Island. This is out toward the tip of Long Island to take the expressway out there, took the express railroad out there to get to this town. And I came to a man who was laying in his bed. He'd been tied down. And the demon was speaking through him. And the demon was speaking through him as he was tied down. And as soon as I walked into the room, I saw the demon through the face of this man laying there saying things like, "Get me a swizzle, get me a swizzle, ha, 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 ha." That kind of thing, you know what I mean, Phil?
No.
Get me a, what do you call the licorice?
Swizzler.
Yeah, he says, "Go get me a swizzler, ha, ha, you retard. That kind of thing. And I said, "Demon be gone, demon be gone." I used a variety of different incantations, which I'm not going to speak to you about because these are all private and all part of the canonical law and the exorcism ritual. You understand?
Of course.
But basically it boils down to demon be gone. Demon away. Get away, demon. And the demon would say to me, "Hey, is there going to be Australian rules football on today? Ha, ha, ha. Your sister's underwear, she left it under my bed." These kinds of things that you automatically identify with Gwilk. Gwilk is the stupidest bastard. God, is he stupid.
Gwilk?
That's the demon, yeah. The real dumbass.
So what was he saying?
He was speaking to this poor possessed man. The man was an auto worker, I think. I know what he did. He worked over at one of these tire places. He was taking the rims off of old tires. He was taking the old tires off of rims. That was his job. And one day, he just pitched out onto the ground, turned green, started spitting up and saying stupid things like, you know, I'd like to bang your mom. I'd like to bang your mom. That kind of thing. So, anyway.
All right, Father, we got a break. We're at the end of the hour. I appreciate this. Can we have you back on at another time to talk about this?
No, I don't ever want to talk about this again. This is it. This is your last chance. No, yes, no, yes, I'm gone. Father James McQuarters, I'm out.
Hello?
He hung up.
Well, no kidding.
Talk about Gwilk, it's the dumbest demon that there is.
Yeah, that's what he says. We'll be right back, Phil Hendry Show.
You don't believe him?
I don't know whether to believe him or not. Your sister's underwear, she left it at my house.
How dare you, dumb
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and when we leave the air each and every evening and morning, we always go over to the website and post a log of the day's that night's show, so you can go over and check out and see what's been happening, and also, the following day, a podcast of our radio show, that is our radio show minus the commercials, is always posted on our website, and you can access that and subscribe to it, and it's downloaded automatically. That's why it's called a podcast. I got my ass kicked real good once, because I didn't use the term podcast properly, you know.
Well, what is a podcast?
A podcast is something that is automatically delivered to your pod, whatever you're using, iPod, their pod, his pod, somebody's pod, or your iPhone. But they don't call it a phone cast, it's a podcast. But it has to be one that is automatically downloaded, I believe.
What do you mean automatically? Like, you don't have to do it?
That you do not have to manually go download it. Otherwise, it's not a podcast. Now, we do call our Milwaukee Lion Games podcasts, even though they are not automatically downloaded, I don't think, yet. But I just do that just to piss people off. And so there you go. You know, words, when we are in the very beginning stages, the infancy of a word, it's going to become what it's going to become. You can't pass a law and say, now it's going to be this. You know, as popular use dictates, that's what the meaning of that word's going to be. And then it becomes something consistent, and eventually it is known as that thing.
Well, I don't know what you like. What word?
Podcast. Podcast. Podcast is what? To most people, I think podcast now means any audio that one can access at any time. It doesn't have to necessarily be on the radio. You can go to the internet and you can get a audio presentation of something. A podcast. Now, I'm sure that there are people that could lecture me ad nauseum about why that's wrong. And that's good for you, and I'm glad to hear that you're keeping busy. But the word is going to mean what the word means. And while I've tried to adhere to the actual meaning of the word podcast, which is, why am I wasting all this time?
I don't know, but I'm about to fall asleep over here.
Yeah, let's just forget about it.
All right, sorry.
No, I thought it was interesting. I thought that what a podcast mean.
Who cares what a podcast mean or what it don't mean? I'm very concerned, and you've not really gone into it, but I'm concerned about Gwellick and where that's all going.
Talking about the dumb demon?
That was what Father McCordis was talking about, and then you drove him off the air like a refugee.
I didn't drive him off the air.
Well, you sort of did.
No, I did not. We came to the end of the hour. That's the end of that. I'm not talking to him. I don't like this taking guests from 1 hour into the next. Very bad radio. It's bad methodology. It's bad, bad, bad. I know the audience probably wants me to explain that, but I don't want to explain it, okay? I want that to just to be our little thing.
What do you mean about methodology?
I just got done saying I don't want to explain it.
Well, you don't want to bring one guest from 1 hour into another hour. Why? Because it...
I think it kills audience more than the average stuff that we do around here, okay? God knows we probably kill audience anyway, but I mean, from going from one part of the hour to another hour with the same guest, listening habits are that people will tune in oftentimes at the top of an hour because they think something's beginning. And if you are talking about something at the beginning of an hour that they don't know what the hell it is you're talking about, like what I'm talking about right now, for instance, we're slaughtering audience left and right. We're just murdering them. If this radio show was a house with sandbags in front of it, the audience would be the bodies that we're just tossing out the front door.
And what about the cops out front?
That's the FCC, right?
Yes, the cops out front of the FCC, the audience are the bodies we're throwing out, and the show is the house that we're in. And that house, by the way, is inhabited by the SLA.
Yay!
So the house will burn to the ground.
Yes, yes. The house will burn to the ground, and the escaping show members, which would be you and me and Bud, will be shot as we are crawling out from underneath the house to try to make our way to safety.
That was about the most black and depressing thing I have ever heard.
It's also pretty funny.
I vote for funny. It's black and depressing, but it's funny.
Well, the only thing black and depressing is my aunt.
I'm going to tell your aunt you said that. Phil Henry Show here, 877-876-PHIL. We do have some outer space news above and beyond Robert's, aunt. This is stuff that's happening in...
What about this port? I want to know more about the shooting in Portland. Tell me more about the shooting in Portland.
No.
Why not?
I don't want to talk about it.
Everyone's talking about it. It's very important. We simply must know more about the shooting in Portland.
No, we're not going to know any more about the shooting in Portland. I'm not going to talk about the shooting in Portland. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to allow it to become another de facto discussion on gun control. I'm not going to allow, and I'm not going to make this mistake. I made this mistake after the Aurora thing. I'm not making it ever again. I'm not going to discuss mental illness because that just really pisses off people that are opposed to national health care because they think I'm trying to wedge that argument, you know.
Oh, but you don't want a discussion about gun control.
Well, Margaret, I think you'd be on my side with this one, right? You're in favor of national health care. I am, right?
Yes.
What do you mean your favorite national health care? What's that got to do with about a guy with a shooting people?
Because the guy's nuts, that's why. Because the cat's nuts. And because if we had some place for these nuts to go and get medicated, maybe he ain't nuts. Maybe the guy is a psychopath. I don't know. But I ain't talking about it. Period.
So you're just going to allow these things to happen?
Margaret, I don't allow them to happen. I'm a citizen, a law-abiding citizen, on the radio, talking as intelligently as I can to as intelligently as audience I can find, with very intelligent people like you. And we're doing what we're doing. I don't control the events in this country any more than a flip of the coin does, any more than anybody else does. I just do my radio show, and I try to get out of here in one piece. I got my own problems. Thank you very much.
I don't know, Mr. Henry, that sounds very self-serving.
It does in a lot of ways, Mr. Henry, if you think about it.
Is that right? Well, I'm not going to think about it.
Think about it, though.
Yes, think about it, Phil.
I'm not thinking about it.
But if you think about it...
I'm not thinking about it. Okay, what?
You're on the radio, and okay, yeah, sure, I'll grant you... that what you do is satirizing, okay?
Uh-huh.
But if a serious thing is going to happen, then you should say about it.
I agree with that. Don't look as if you're better than everyone else, Mr. Henry.
Bud, thank you for your opinion. Thank you very much. But no, I reject it, and I'll tell you why. For the longest time, I have recognized that talk radio doesn't change anything. As a matter of fact, talk radio adds to the confusion and the pollution of our airwaves. I'm the only one saying this because I'm honest and I'm truthful and I'm forthright, just like the Boy Scouts taught me to be. So I'm not going to pretend like we're going to change minds on this show. I'm going to just come on the air, spit out whatever it is I've got to spit out, and then wave goodbye and prance off into, as it were, the sunrise or sunset, depending upon which time of the day it is when you're hearing the show. And that, my friend, is that.
Well, you know what I got to say to that?
What?
Ah, bean fart.
Well, you dirty...
Ow, ow!
That was funny.
Let it go, bud.
Ow!
Oh, yeah, that was real funny. Real, get out of here.
I didn't really fart.
Get out of here. What a punk.
Well, Phil, it needed some comment.
Well, and that's what the guy comes up with, huh? Ah, bean fart.
I didn't really fart. All you gotta do is take a whiff.
I don't care. You're a child. You're a child in a man's game. You understand? This here, this is a man's game. You are a little boy.
Well, sometimes, Phil, you're the little boy.
All right, well, then I'm a little boy in a little boy's game when I'm the little boy. But when I'm not a little boy and I'm a man, this is a man's game, and he's the little boy
in a little boy game.
In a man's game. It's a little boy's game when I'm the little boy.
What about when he's a man?
Then he's a man in a little boy's game. 8-7, let's take a break.
Yeah, I really think you need to break. I think you need to have Dan. Dan should put a tape up.
No, he's not putting any tape up. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The Hubble Telescope is giving scientists a look at the oldest galaxies ever seen, dating back some, get a load of this, 13.3 billion years, providing a glimpse into how the cosmos must have looked right after the Big Bang. NASA scientists announced on Wednesday that Hubble has uncovered never-before-seen primitive galaxies dating back to when the universe was less than 4% of its current age. These archaeological images from Hubble were gleaned from an intensely studied patch of sky known as the Ultra Deep Field. A team of astronomers led by Richard Ellis at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, using Hubble's Wide Field Camera 3, the WFC-3, to peer deeper into space than any previous Hubble observation. Hubble scientists said the most ancient of the seven new galaxies came into being about 13.3 billion years ago, some 380 million years after the Big Bang. Now that is, in terms of the universe's life, nothing. It's less than a billion years after the universe was born. And the reason why they can see into the past, if you will, folks, it's a very, very simple explanation. Light takes time to get to our eyes. We know that light travels at, what is the speed of light, Dan, per second? It's 186,000 miles per second. 186,000 miles per second is fast, and yet it still takes time to travel a certain distance. We now know, of course, that there is light that we see in the sky from the sun that takes 8 minutes to get to us. So technically, the image of the sun you're looking at is 8 minutes old. That's not a big thing, and we don't look at it that way. We always, oh, there's the sun, and the sun is what it is, but it's actually the sun 8 minutes ago. When we look at the sky at night and we see stars twinkling from afar, we're looking at some stars that have been, in some instances, that are dead now, and the light we're seeing is light from a star that is long dead.
What? How's that possible?
Are you listening to what I'm saying here, man? Because it takes time. Light travels at the speed of 186,000 miles a second, or 700 million miles an hour. Thank you, Dan. 700 million miles an hour.
All right, 700 million miles an hour. That means that, what?
Never mind. Okay, I don't know. It's 700 million miles an hour. So how many million, so a billion miles, it would take the light over an hour to travel, a billion miles. Light, in other words, has such long distances to travel in space that we now call, we don't call it a distance of miles, we call it a light year. We don't say that star is 85 billion trillion gazillion miles away. We say it's 9 light years, meaning it took 9 years for the light from that star to reach our eyes. This is what's so immense about the universe. This is the thing that just blows our minds. And this is, by the way, why people argue if we're ever really going to explore the universe, we're going to need some kind of vehicle that travels at the speed of light.
Yeah, on Star Trek they do, and I know it's fake, I know it, but they do now have on Star Trek, what's it called?
Yeah, they got a warp coil.
Oh, that's a lot of hogwash. Everyone knows.
Well,
I don't know warp coil, bud. What's a warp coil?
The guys that wrote the show studied on it.
Oh, get out of here. Have they studied on anything? I don't know. I mean, but the fact is, it takes years. So now what Hubble has done is photographed these patches of sky showing light that comes not 1 light year or 1,000 light years or even a billion light years. This is light that is coming from 13.3 billion light years. Well, is it light years? Well, it's 13.3 billion years ago that light existed that we're seeing now. Now, how many light years that is, I don't know. They're simply saying dating back 13.3 billion years. If a light year is, in point of fact, the amount of time that it takes light to reach our eyes, then we can say that was 13.3 billion years ago. Is that what that is?
I don't know, Phil. You're asking the wrong person. If you want to ask me, what did Tom Hanks have for lunch yesterday? What new movie?
What did Tom Hanks have for lunch yesterday?
I don't know. God, what an idiot taking me.
All right, well, but the point is, you're looking at stuff that no longer exists. So we're seeing light coming from the very beginning of the universe. That's what we're talking about. We are identifying light that is so far away that it is literally light reflecting finally to us. It's finally reaching our eyes, taking all those years to reach our eyes, and originating back at the very birth of our universe. It's amazing. It's astounding. I'm telling you, it's almost scary, the things we don't know. And I, you know, It finally just kind of occurred to me the other day. I was thinking, you know how people say, if mankind vanishes, who will ever know and who will ever care? And that's the end of that. And I think it's a great thought, and it's very heavy, and it's very existential and all that. But the fact is, it's true. I mean, think about it. If this planet blows up tomorrow, let's say, who cares? I mean, take a look at the size of this freaking universe we're in, man. Somebody's going to, if there is anybody else out there, this, did you hear about this thing that, I don't know, I caught a puff on the telescope. I don't know what the hell it was. That's it. That's the end of it. All of our books, all of our learning, all of our religion, all of our heaviosity, all the stuff we think is so bitching, we're done, man. No one cares. No one knows. That's the end of that. And I think that's ultimately the great story of life. That's why we talk about humility. Just be here, learn what you can, and then you're dead, and don't make a big deal out of it, Jack.
Well, that's easy for you to say, Phil, but there are a great many of us that want to achieve things for the ages that will be long remembered.
Remembered by who if the planet blows up?
Yeah, see?
Just, excuse me, no one's talking to you. Remembered by who if the planet blows up? What do you mean if the planet blows up?
If the planet is gone, if the human race is gone, if we're all gone, who's going to know and who's going to care?
The people that were here, our writings will survive. Our film, our video libraries. I don't understand what he means.
Yeah, but Margaret, if the planet's gone, there ain't going to be no video library.
Would you please just back off? You're spitting on me.
All right. If the planet's gone, there won't be no video library.
Yeah.
Well, you're spitting on me. Would you tell him to back off?
Okay, Robert, but do you hear what he's saying?
Yes, he's saying there's not going to be there'll always be record of man. Man and only man has achieved what we've achieved. Yes, I believe in God. But God saw fit to have a contract with man. We have an agreement with God. You understand that, don't you?
According to our religion, yes.
And the contract we have with God, that is, but Robert and Bud, think about that.
Yeah, so God will, what if he goes back on it?
Yeah, what if he breaches the contract or something?
What if God breaches the contract?
Yeah, that's a good question. What if God does breach the contract? What if God finally says, you know what, I'm tearing it up? And even if we have a contract with God, which I guess we do.
You guess we do. You, the Catholic boy.
Look, I was raised Catholic. It doesn't mean that I necessarily... What I'm saying is, all right, let's say the testament, the covenant, all that stuff. We have an agreement with God, right?
Yes.
We have an agreement with God that we will do this and so, and then he agrees that he'll do thus and so, and the agreement is cool. All right, great. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't keep us from blowing ourselves to bits. And then no one will know anything about it.
If we have an agreement with God, do you honestly believe we're going to be blown to bits? Do you think God would dare? We are people that he decided he should go into business with, if you want to get right down to it. And he is going to stab us in the back? If I were God, I'd have a care.
What does he care? Are you kidding? He's the guy that made us.
Yeah, God, he could do anything he wants.
I'm just saying, if God has a covenant with us, and then he decides, well, I think I'll kill them. You know, that's what...
What? What does he care? He doesn't care. What's the revenge you're going to take on God?
Someone somewhere will know. The record...
What record, Margaret? If the planet blows to bits, man. It's not... There's no record. It's done. No one's going to know we had a covenant with God. No one's going to give a damn. They won't even know what God is. If we're talking about some civilization, and let's hope there's another civilization. What if we are the only one?
Oh, that's absolutely absurd.
No. No, it's not absurd. No, it's not absurd. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
You're pointing at the camera like you're on TV.
I am. Hey, we'll be right back.
Yeah, all right. All right. All right.
You really ought to be ashamed of yourself the way you're talking. Are you saying God's...
I'm saying God's going to do what he wants to do.
And he's going to... You know, some people don't walk away from deals like that.
Yeah. You're out of your mind, Margaret. If you think it's... Ow!
Phil Henry.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You know, I shouldn't say, but I'm just looking at this thing on Military Channel. You know, there isn't anything more badass on this planet than these early films from World War II of Marines hitting the beach at Iwo Jima with zinc oxide on their faces, you know?
What?
I'm telling you, I just saw these Marines, and obviously these guys are now veterans of the island-hopping battles that the Marine Corps fought in the Pacific, not taking anything away from the Army in Europe or the Army in the Pacific. But when you look at these Marines on these films that I watch, these are these documentaries.
Well, these are the World War II color.
Yeah, the Military Channel and the History Channel have now come up with these colorized images, which I think is great. I know there's a lot of people who say,
you know, artistically, the black and white.
Well, we're talking about a documentary piece of footage that shows black and white images because that was the film available to those men at that time. But some of them were shot in color. But they have, and I never quite saw these. I just saw some pictures of these Marines, and I believe they were on their way to Iwo Jima. And they were in those landing craft that the Marines used that had mounted machine guns on the front. We'd learned an awful lot. The Marines had learned a hell of a lot about this kind of amphibious war and amphibious landings that they were forced into making by way of the so-called battlefield. And so by the time they got to Iwo Jima and places like that, Okinawa, they had these landing craft with these mounted machine guns. They had all kinds of extra armor. They were, you know, definitely ready to hit the beach. The guys on D-Day, I don't know if they had that similar kind of thing. But anyway, they were showing these documentary bits of film of the Marines, and they got zinc oxide on their faces, cigarettes hanging out of their mouths, you know, kind of wrapping their dog tags up, talking, chewing gum, and you're looking at guys. I know they're scared. I mean, because they tell you that they're scared. The guys that survived will say we were scared every minute. But for all intents and purposes, they look like guys that are about to go scuba diving or surfing or something.
Well, that's the nature. As my uncle, who was a Marine, said, that's a Marine. And there's no explaining them. You can't get into it. You don't even want to talk to them about it.
Did you ever talk to your uncle about it?
No. No, I listened, but I didn't talk. I didn't say, oh, Uncle Dewey, can you tell me?
Your uncle's name is Dewey.
Yeah, well, you go up to my Uncle Dewey and make fun of him and see what he says.
Easy, bud, okay?
No, I'm not disrespecting him. Just that his name is Dewey.
Dewey? Yes, that was his name, Uncle Dewey. And he talked about being in the Marine Corps, and he was in World War II, but I never asked him. I waited for him to talk about it, then we would...
Did he talk about it much?
No, he didn't. But he was at a lot of those places you mentioned. He was at, I forget, what was it called? Gunawa? Guganawa?
Okinawa.
No, that was not where he was. He was at Guga something.
Oh, come on, Margaret. You and I always have this discussion. Every time I give you the right name, it's Guga something, you know.
Yeah, Okinawa's a place.
All right, it was Okinawa. I thought it was Gugu something.
Gugu?
Oh, no, that was the name of the bird. There was a Goonie bird or something? I don't know.
Anyway, so, I was looking at these guys, and they got their zinc oxide. It is Iwo Jima, because there's this flag going up right now. All right, enough of that nonsense. Now then, as Dan and I were sitting here kicking it around, we have come to the realization and the belief, a very firm belief, and it won't take much to move us off of this, though. That's how really convinced we are. Not much. But we do believe 13.3 billion light years means 13.3 billion years. In other words, that's how long it took the light. If it's a light year, it's the distance that it takes light to travel in a year. So if it's the distance that it takes light to travel in a year, then that's how many years? I don't know. But here is a story that I think will... clarify it for somebody out there. Maybe not me. Most likely not me, but some of you guys listening, you might get it. The universe is filled with stuff, says the article, and a lot of it is very, very far away. But now scientists have a new record holder for the furthest galaxy from Earth's. NASA scientists found galaxy MACSO647-JD. That's the name of it.
Why do they give it such an asinine...
Yeah, who's going to remember that?
They'll give it another name. Right now, they just got to give it a name.
Yeah, well, how come the guy used all the number? Why just call Galaxy 4?
Because maybe they already got a Galaxy 4. Remember what we said about Reservoir Dogs? You're not going to be Mr. Purple. Some other guy on another job is named Mr. Purple.
What?
Anyway, NASA scientists found galaxy MACSO647JD by using the Hubble and Spitzer space telescopes. The young-looking galaxy is approximately 13.3 billion light-years away. A light-year is the distance of how light travels in 1 year in a vacuum. In a vacuum, meaning not through any atmosphere, but in the vacuum of space. So that would be slightly different if we were asking ourselves how long does it take light to travel, say, on Earth, which is not in a vacuum.
Well, now you're losing me.
No, never mind. It's not that big of a deal. Light travels at 186,282 miles per second, and a single light year is about 6 trillion miles. A single light year is 6 trillion miles. So in layman's terms, this galaxy is around 79.8 trillion miles away from Earth. A single light year is 6 trillion miles, right? So if you divide 6 into 69.8 trillion miles, you get roughly 13.
Wait a minute. How far away is the galaxy?
13.3 billion miles.
No, but I'm saying the galaxy. I'm using the poetic pronunciation. How far away is the galaxy? Meaning God. You know...
Will you shut up?
Well, I don't...
Give me that pronunciation thing, Margaret. I'm trying to do... We're doing some science here, okay? Now, what the hell do they mean? I give up.
No, there's got to be a way to figure it out.
I give up. I'm not going to figure it out, man. 6 trillion miles away is one light year. It's 79, so there's one light year of 6 trillion miles. So if I divide 79.8 trillion miles, that gives me how many light years away from Earth this galaxy is. That would be 6 trillion going into 79. Oh, maybe it comes out to 13.3 billion.
Well, now, give him a cigar.
No, it wouldn't. It would come out to more like 13.3 trillion. That's what it would come out to. I'm no wonder people don't understand this stuff. If people understood this stuff, then people would be more amenable to supporting further exploration of space. But when you start talking to us in these, and when you get CBS to try to explain stuff, NASA and JPL and all of you scientists and eggheads, if you got CBS trying to interpret... You cats are lost already, man. If I were you, I would contract with someone that speaks English. This is some writer for CBS.
Well, why are you blaming them, Phil? I mean, they're trying.
I don't care. They're not explaining it very well. One of the things that I learned from a dear friend of mine that went into the technical writing field, I've got a very good friend of mine, didn't go into the technical writing field, but he studied technical writing in college. You want to know why? Because he realized that instruction manuals, directions, warnings, descriptions of things. In other words, technical writing is not creative writing. It's technical. It's, this is a liquid that will do this and this and this and this. Here are the instructions on how to play Monopoly, and so on and so forth. No one knows how to write those. We got nothing but idiots that write those. God bless them, I guess, for trying, but the fact is I'd rather you not even try if you don't know how to do it. And you have people that write instructions for things, or they write descriptions for things, and they don't know what the hell it is they're doing. Now, it's one thing to write an article for a newspaper. Okay, I get it. You know, it's up to me to do my own research, and I've always believed that. But here I am on the radio trying to glean from CBS a news source that one would think... anyway.
Yeah, you just gotta live with it, man. Ain't nothing you gotta be able to do about it.
Yeah, can't do nothing about it, man. Just gotta live in it, man. It's their world. All we're doing is scrubbing the skid marks out.
It is true, Phil. It's their world, and all we're doing is scrubbing the skid... What did you say?
Never mind.
My God.
All right, never mind.
Well, it's true.
No, it ain't true. So anyway, that's the story of that galaxy. What other where's that other spaceman stuff we had?
You want to get up on this?
I don't want to talk about this crap anymore. We got one more?
Yeah, I got another Martian story over here.
What does he mean, Martian story?
There's another story that we have on some outer space thing. They found something on a... Oh, here it is. They found a river on one of the moons of Saturn, a moon called Titan. Scientists with NASA's Cassini mission...
Now, there was an Oleg Cassini who was a fashion designer. I know that's not what this is, but are they related?
No, I don't think they're related. The Cassini, I don't know who the Cassini is in this. We'll look it up. We got a lot of stuff to look up here, and we only got about 20 minutes left in the show. Scientists with NASA's Cassini mission have spotted what appears to be a miniature version of the Nile River on Saturn's largest moon, Titan. The 400-kilometer, or 250-mile-long feature from headwaters to a large sea is the longest extraterrestrial river ever to be discovered and imagined to such a high resolution. Image to such a high resolution. There must be pictures of it. In comparison, the Nile River in Egypt is 4,132 miles long. So the Nile River on Earth beats the crap out of this one on Saturn. Using Cassini's radar imaging instruments, the scientists were able to deduce that the feature is indeed a river, as the dark, smooth surface within the meanders within the thing meanders and channels suggests the presence of a liquid. Titan is known to have vast seas, the only other body in the solar system apart from Earth to possess a cycle of liquids on its surface. However, the thick Titan atmosphere is a frigid one, meaning liquid water couldn't possibly flow. The liquids on Titan are therefore composed of hydrocarbons such as methane and ethane.
What? They're not flowing?
No. They're flowing, but it isn't water. It's methane and ethane. That's what's flowing. Because the atmosphere is so cold, water couldn't flow, so it's some other kind of solution. I mean, really, what we're looking at in our solar system are various states of evolution of planets. And it just so happens we live on the one, you know...
Yeah, that's lucky.
It's not lucky. That's... What do you mean lucky?
What do you figure the odds are that we'd be on the one planet that we can breathe on and everything?
It's why we're here, man. What do you mean lucky?
No, but what do you say, man? How lucky can you be?
We ain't lucky, Jack. We wouldn't be here if the planet wasn't already ready to support life.
That's not luck. That is the result of the sustainability of life on this planet.
Yeah, they're using big words. That means they don't know.
Yeah. You don't understand how, we got lucky.
We didn't get lucky, man. We didn't get lucky. We're here because the planet is able to sustain life, like Margaret was saying, okay? But what the rest of these planets in the solar system represent are varying stages of the evolution of, if you will, planets, the solar system, and so forth. Earth, at one point, was probably a lot like Saturn. It had ethane and methane and all this crap on it that you couldn't live through, man, if you had all the contracts with God in the world. You wouldn't be able to live through this stuff.
God would let you live. If God wanted you to breathe ethane...
Yeah, what about if God had us breathe ethane?
Then we'd be breathing ethane.
See? That's what I'm saying.
No, you ain't saying anything, man. You guys haven't said anything since the show started. If we were ethane-breathing animals, then that's what we would be.
What we look like?
We probably have, like, oxygen tank for heads or something like that.
Is that possible?
What?
That we would have heads that look like oxygen tanks?
Yeah, it probably would, given because of the way that we evolved.
How do you know what we'd look like? How do you know?
Well, it stands to reason if God made us to breathe ethane.
Okay, so God makes us to breathe ethane. Why does that mean our heads look like...
See, you can't take nothing serious.
Oh, get out of here, man. How do you know that makes our heads look like oxygen tanks?
All right, I'm done. I'm sick.
Oh, give me a break, will you, Margaret?
I'm going to the toilet.
Good, you go to the toilet.
What are you laughing about?
Are you out of your mind or something, man? You don't even know why you said what you said. If God... Do we have to break, Dan? Please say yes. Oh, thank God. Yeah, thank God.
Boy, what do you... Yeah, see, you're losing the argument, man.
I'm not losing anything, man. I just don't want to get into an argument about why it is our heads aren't shaped like oxygen tanks. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, see, truth is our bitch, and you don't even want to... You don't even want to have truth be the bitch.
right, welcome back here at the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Bud, why are you looking up barbecue places?
Because I just want to see if they sell... When you said you had to get that gas for the barbecue...
Yeah, propane.
Yes, all right. What about that? Now, you were laughing at Bud and you were laughing at me. But we're talking about methane and ethane-based life. Wouldn't the heads look... Well...
Margaret, if you're going to try to get me into this, I'm going to laugh again, okay?
Yeah, but look.
Yeah, I'm looking at the methane tank in that barbecue, that big round ball.
Yeah.
And you think that the guys that live on a planet where methane...
No, propane.
Just because that's how we store propane doesn't mean that that's how our heads are going to look if we...
All right, you know something, I'm...
Go ahead, Margaret.
Can I leave early?
No, but you can go to the bathroom again.
Well, so in other words, I'm trapped.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Welcome to doing a radio show. Welcome to doing a radio show. No, you don't just... If I could just get up and leave, believe me, I would have been gone and you would... there wouldn't have been hide nor hair of me for years.
Well, isn't that an interesting revelation?
If I got to sit here and listen to you guys talking about, hey, if there's life on another planet and it breathes methane, doesn't it stand to reason the guy's head is going to look like a barbecue?
Shut up!
Yeah, Mr. That's not very nice.
Oh, get out. Are you guys nuts? Of course I'm going to laugh, bud. You got to learn that some of the stuff that comes out of your face is pretty whack.
Some of the stuff that comes out of my face is whack. The stuff that comes out of your cake hole, man, it takes a world record for numbnut. Tell you that.
Watch your language. And I'll tell you something else, man. This whole idea about some guy's head looking like a barbecue or...
We didn't say barbecue. We said propane tank. All right, we'll drop it. You want to laugh? Go ahead.
Of course I'm laughing, Margaret. Of course I am. I dare you to take your theory anywhere. I dare you to take your theory to JPL. Take it to any place, anywhere.
What if I... Well...
What, you want to take it down to the barbecue place? Why don't you ask those guys first?
No, we were talking about going to Caltech tomorrow.
Be my guest. I would love it. Go to Caltech tomorrow. Talk to the guys, whoever you find. Ask them about life and evolution. Ask them what our heads would look like if all we breathed was propane. And then tell them that your theory is our heads would look like barbecues.
I didn't say barbecue. I said an oxygen tank.
And I said a round propane tank. You keep grinning like that, Phil, and one of these days someone's going to...
Wipe that grin off my face. Sound like my dad now. All right, folks.
Well, we're going tomorrow.
Good. Go to Caltech. That's great.
You even know where Caltech is?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do know where Caltech is. I used to hang out there when I was in high school. You wouldn't believe what I did at Caltech when I was a kid. I used to crawl up into this bell tower they had there and smoke cigarettes and stare at the people.
You did what?
I swear to God, me and a friend of mine, just some days, you know, we'd walk over, because he lived around the corner from Caltech. This is big campus on Del Mar Avenue there in Pasadena. And they had a library, and they, in later years, I used to go to Beckham Auditorium, or is it Beckman, I forget.
Well, I think it's Beckman. I've never been there, but I would just...
Okay, fine.
Well, Phil, you're not the only one with all the answers.
I understand. In later years, I used to go to Beckman Auditorium to watch the jazz concerts, and I went to a few gigs there. Anyway, long story short, there was a bell tower or some kind of a tower there that we've discovered, and we went up into this thing, and we would hang out there and just, you know, smoke cigs like young, ruffian, stupid kids and laugh and point, and, you know, it was kind of a cool place to just go.
That was on Caltech.
That was on the Caltech campus, yeah. And this was years and years ago, man. Now I dare say they probably don't allow just anybody to walk on campus. I mean, this was back in a time when you could just walk on campus, use the library if you wanted to. I don't know if you could check out books, but you could go and look at books. Nobody hassled you. It was pretty interesting. And being on the campus of Caltech, of course, you're sitting there thinking, wow, there's all these geniuses, you know.
Well, did they all have the, you know, the bad skin and that kind of thing?
No. No, they didn't. A lot of them look like regular guys, you know, and women. All right, that's the end of this. I can't do any more damage than I've done. Margaret and Bud are going to Caltech tomorrow to find out what our heads look like.
Shut up!
Well, that's what you said, didn't you?
Yeah, but you gotta make it sound better.
I'll do it. We will be back tomorrow evening, ladies and gentlemen, to report on what we find out from the Life Sciences Department at Caltech. Thank you and have a very pleasant good evening. Except for you, Phil. I hope you go to...
Go to hell?
I didn't say that, but...
That's what you meant.
I didn't say that.
Anyway, The Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. And don't forget, we're online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Join us, won't you? Be a member of our backstage pass family. Until tonight at 10 o'clock, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.